Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Our listener support campaign continues, and I want to thank you so much for all of your support. I want to especially thank those who've donated Robin, Lisa, Carolyn, and Ronald, and we'll send along access to our premium site, which we do with all donations of $7 or more. And at the $20 level, we'll send a digital copy of All I Needed to Know I Learned from Columbo, plus one other thank you gift of your choice. Among the options available are the great Perry Mason radio dramas from the Colonial Radio Theater on the air. We've had so many listeners request these. They're based right on the original book, so a little bit of a different perspective than the 1950s TV series with Raymond Burr. In addition, at the $100 level, you can get an autographed copy of my book, Tales of the Dim Night, or Fly Another Day, or Powerhouse Hard Pressed, if you're in the U.S. and Canada. Also, if you're in the U.S. and Canada, I've got a special treat at the $50 level, and this is just a limited number of books available. I have six Michael Shane books in original paperbacks from the 1950s and 60s in perfectly readable condition. They're great pocketbooks. They were like the Kindles before they had the Kindles. And with a donation of $50 or more in the U.S. or Canada, I will send you, two of these books for your reading pleasure. They're pretty fun books, and I think you'll enjoy them. All right, well, it's time now to find out. Did Johnny totally blow the Fathom 5 matter? Here now is the Fathom 5 matter, part 5.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Barney Wilson here.
All right, Mr. Wilson, I'm braced. Rub it in.
Well, you were a little overconfident.
Overconfident? Let's face it, I made a jerk of myself. After I apologize to you, I've got to crawl out there and apologize to Mrs. Markey.
I wouldn't be too hasty about it.
I've been putting it off for the last 2 hours. After the way I talked to her, I'd rather walk into a cage of lions than face her again. But I thought her husband was alive, and I thought she knew it. Then your boys have to go and pull his body out of the surf.
Well, that's why I called.
I had a tag for an out-and-out insurance fraud.
Mr. Dollar, the way it looks right now, I don't know what it is.
It was probably murder. What else?
Look, if you want to lose your mind, you come on over here to the morgue.
Why? What do you mean?
Mr. Dollar, I've been a detective for 20 years, but I've never hit one before that was as crazy as this.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Miami Beach, to the Home Office, Delta Liability, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the Fathom 5 matter. It happened to involve a 75,000 insurance policy. Item 17, $1.60, taxi from my hotel to the county morgue. I couldn't figure what Wilson meant. When the cruiser Fathom 5 burned and sank and William Markey's body wasn't found, I thought I'd spotted an attempted insurance swindle. I'd even warned Mrs. Markey not to try to file a claim. And then, a few hours ago, Markey's drowned body had been washed up on the beach. Wilson should be happy. He'd been proven right. But instead, he'd sounded more mixed up and uncertain than he'd been before.
morning, Mr. Dollar.
You know, you don't pick the pleasantest places in the world to hold conferences.
I thought you might want to take a look at him. Though I'll be eternally blasted if I know what anybody could tell by looking. Well, there's the lad who's given us all the trouble, Mr. Dollar. William Markey, number 423.
I never thought I'd see him here. I told Mrs. Markey that the only thing that would convince me he wasn't alive would be to see his body. All right, I'm convinced. And I'll never try to outguess an ocean current again. Everything seemed to add up to... Oh, now, wait a minute.
I wondered how long it'd be before you noticed.
Doesn't make sense.
Like I said on the phone, this one is crazy.
This was pulled out of the surf this morning?
Right.
And the cruiser sank 5 days ago. That's when Markey supposedly drowned.
You're on the beam, Mr. Dollar.
This body hasn't been in the ocean for 5 days.
You win the 4-day trip to Bermuda and a complete new wardrobe.
Have you had an autopsy?
Doc Morgan just finished it 20 minutes ago. That's why I called you. Doc wouldn't stick around himself. No, I think he went out to get drunk.
How long does he think Markey has been dead?
Not over 18 hours since sometime last night. Looks like we were both right. For whatever good it is, he was alive after the sinking, just like you claimed, and now he's dead, just like I claimed.
What was the cause of death?
Drowning. Only you haven't heard the real crazy part yet.
Why? What do you mean?
You remember we found one of his shoes washed in a couple of days ago?
Yeah.
The body was wearing two shoes when they pulled it out.
They always make one slip, don't they?
A couple in this case.
Huh?
It's the second one that nearly pushed Doc Morgan off his rocker.
What second one?
Markey was drowned, all right, but not in the ocean.
Huh?
It was fresh water in his lungs, not seawater.
Was Morgan sure?
Swore by it, and then at it. That's what threw him.
Yeah, I imagine. When you get an 18-hour test on a man who's supposed to have been dead for 5 days, and find fresh water when it ought to be salt. Well, I guess the late Mr. Markey can't tell us much of anything else.
So, where do we go from here, Mr. Dollar?
Good question. You haven't found the car yet, huh? The one Markey bought under an assumed name?
No, but I gave the boys an extra pride to bear down on it. Half the town force is out looking for it now.
Wonder where he was hiding out for those 4 days.
What I want to know is who killed him and how and why.
Oh, the why is fairly easy. It's the who and how that carry the question marks. That fingerprint ID was certain, huh? There's not the slightest doubt of what this is, William Markey.
Oh, you're looking for an easy way out, Mr. Dollar.
Yeah, I guess I am at that. Well, then it looks like our number one is the lad you've been after all along.
Young Danny Haynes, huh?
What do you say we go and have a talk with him? Only one thing was wrong with the idea. It didn't work. Haynes wasn't in, and the clerk at his hotel said he hadn't seen him all day. The night clerk admitted that he'd slept through most of his shift and wasn't sure of anything. We searched Haynes' room and found nothing. So for the moment, we left it at that. Wilson put a stakeout in the hotel and went back to his office. I went to my hotel and waited. Johnny Dollar.
Barney Wilson.
Yeah, what's up?
We finally got a break. The boys found that car.
Where?
Parked at the curb out on the east side of town. May have been abandoned there, or it may be where Markey was hiding out. It's in front of an apartment house.
Have they checked through it yet?
No, they haven't touched it. I'm leaving to go out there now. Want me to swing by and pick you up?
If you don't, I'll sue you. I'll meet you out in front of the hotel. We stopped a block away and walked up to the apartment house. The car was still parked at the curb, and the plainclothes man watching it said no one had been near it. We went on inside and found the landlady, identified ourselves, and started questioning her. Luck seems to still be with us.
Well, you see, most of my guests are permanent, as you might say. Or at least as permanent as renters ever are.
Yes, we understand.
In fact, the only unit I've let in the last 2 months is number 14. That's up one flight with a pull-down bed.
When did you rent that one?
Well, let's see now. I think it was about 10 days ago. He paid a month's rent in advance.
What was his name?
Mr. Jones. A very nice, quiet, middle-aged fella.
Lived by himself?
Oh, yes, and never went out much. After he moved in, that is. He didn't stay here for the first 4 or 5 days after he rented it.
Until the night the Fathom Five sank.
When did you see Mr. Jones last?
Well, it's a funny thing. He went out yesterday evening and he didn't come back at all.
What kind of a car did he drive?
Well, good heavens, I don't know. But you can look for yourself. It's parked out there at the curb. A friend of his brought it by a while ago.
What?
What's the friend's name?
Why, I didn't ask him. He's an awful nice young fella. He said Mr. Jones was going on a trip and sent him to pick up his belongings. And he had Mr. Jones's key, so I decided it was all right. He's up there packing now.
It's next door down there.
Better take it easy. It's hard to tell what to expect.
Right. He's in there, all right.
Try the knob. Easy.
It's locked.
And there isn't much choice.
Who is it?
Open up, Haynes. We want to talk to you. I said open up.
Get away from that door.
Watch it, Wilson.
I'm warning you, don't try to come in.
Well, we know now what to expect.
I'll cover the door here, Dollar. You go down and tell Dave to cover the outside windows and call in for a couple of squad cars.
Right. Hey, he's going out that window. There must be a fire escape.
Come on, let's hit the door.
There he is, at the bottom of the fire escape.
Hold it, Haynes!
Stay back!
All right, Haynes, it's up to you. Throw down that gun or I'll drop you. I'm sorry, kid.
He's down.
Yeah.
That second shot was dead center.
I know. I tried to hold low on him, but it jumped up on me.
Well, he said he'd die for her if it came to that.
It came to that.
It was after dark when Wilson and I drove out to the Markey Beach House. There were no lights on and nobody answered the doorbell. So Wilson forced entrance and we shook the place down. We found evidence of a struggle in the study and in the bathroom. Water from the bathtub had overflowed behind the tile and was still seeping out along the baseboard. We found a dressing gown of Mrs. Markey stuffed in the back of a closet, soaking wet. Piece by piece, Wilson collected his evidence, and the picture became more and more clear. He phoned in for a fingerprint crew and went on working. I left him there and went back into town to my hotel and took the elevator up to my room.
Mr. Dollar.
What are you doing here?
Waiting for you. They've got extras out. They say the police shot Danny Haynes. I thought maybe you could tell me what it's all about.
Sure. And what you mostly want to know is how much he talked before he died. Isn't that it, Mrs. Markey?
I don't know what you mean.
Then go on out to your house and ask Wilson. He's out there with a fingerprint crew. And I imagine he can tell you anything you want to know by now. I slipped up last night. I thought it was Haynes who came to your door. But it wasn't. It was your husband. And you told him to come back later. Then when I left, you called Haynes and had him come over.
If he said that, he lied.
I even gave you the idea for it myself. When I said the only thing that could convince me your husband wasn't alive would be to see his dead body. So you talked Haynes into helping you provide the evidence I said I'd have to have.
My husband's body was found in the ocean. They told me that this evening.
Yeah, but he didn't die there. He was drowned in the bathtub at your house, and you and Haynes did it.
You're out of your mind. Danny Haynes was lying.
Then go tell Wilson. It's his job now, not mine. Maybe you'll be able to convince him, but I doubt it. And I'm pretty sure you won't be able to convince a jury.
You think not. I'll get the best lawyer money can buy.
Yeah, you do that, Mrs. Markey, but don't plan on using any of that insurance money for it.
Why not?
Because there won't be any. That policy was already void when you and Haynes killed your husband last night. An attempted fraud cancels the policy the minute it's committed. In other words, Mrs. Markey, 5 days ago when your husband sank the Fathom Five and tried to play dead.
I don't believe it.
You've lost out all the way around, Mrs. Markey. Your husband, your boyfriend, your insurance claim. And now you stand a pretty good chance of losing your life. A four-time loser. That's really a record. Expense account item 18, $321.60, hotel and incidentals in Miami and transportation back to Hartford. Expense account total $684.95. End of account, end of report. Remarks? You quoted a line of Shakespeare at the start of this case, Ralph. Full fathom five, thy father lies. Well, you're wrong. It turns out to be the widow who lies. And lies and lies. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, there'll be another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, beginning next Monday night.
Next week. Well, if I'd minded my own business, I wouldn't have heard the girl beg for help. And from that point on, I needed help. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Les Crutchfield, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Mary Jane Croft, Barney Phillips, Carlton Young, Eleanor Audley, Sam Edwards, Shep Menken, and John Daner. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. Well, actually, I found it kind of funny when you had the district attorney making the point that both he and Johnny had been technically right. No, you were never right in this case. 'Cause your big assumption, the big basis for the claim was that he'd been killed on the Phantom Five. And of course, that wasn't the case. On this episode, we really dealt with probably the worst of femme fatales, because Johnny made it clear the insurance company could not prosecute them at all, because they hadn't filed the claim yet and there would have been no legal issues, if they just gone ahead and decided to stage husband come back. But she got greedy, and unfortunately for her, just did not really think ahead that well. But hopefully Johnny learned a lesson, and he'll avoid ever jumping quickly to any conclusions without evidence, and just be very cautious and circumspect about everything he says and does. And if you believe that, now, I don't think we'd, even though it's technically a flaw, I don't think it's one we would have Johnny Dollar without in this Bob Bailey version. Now on to some listener comments. Lisa says, I enjoy great detectives and particularly Dragnet, which brings me back to my childhood. Thanks, Adam. And let's see here. Any additional comments? Jean Russell on Facebook says of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, the best series ever. And, it's hard to think of one, when we're listening to these five-parters that really was better. This is, to me, the peak of great radio. It's, it just doesn't get much better than this. The writing, the directing, the acting, and just the stories. This is, you know, next to some of the episodes of Dragnet, this is really just some of the finest radio we'll hear, and we're glad to bring it to you. All right, well, now we have a Carter Brown mystery to continue. It's time for Crime for a King, Part 3.
Carter Brown Mysteries. Adventures in excitement and suspense, based on the best-selling novels by the slick storytelling sensation, Carter Brown. The deeper I delved into the setup, the more it made mystery. It was turning out a king-size problem for a private eye called King. My big bewilderment was concerned with the date, the 18th, on which something was supposed to happen, which everyone was worried about in one way or another. But I figured I stood a fair chance of finding out what the 18th meant after the ultimatum I had delivered to Marcia Oliver. I was due to call on her at midnight when, I hoped, all would be explained. Meantime, I headed for the precinct to pick up my car, which had been impounded from in front of Pulvey's office. After a long explanation to the police about sick relatives and a $20 fine, I got the Dodge back, and then it was close enough to midnight, and Marcia.
Oh, it's you.
It's not my twin brother.
You couldn't have a twin brother. There couldn't be two mistakes like you.
You know, Marcia, you're sweet, like cyanide candy.
Cut the compliments and come in.
You phrased the invitation so tenderly, I can't resist.
I'm glad, pal. Just stand nice and still. This is a hair trigger and my finger's twitching. Shut the door, Marcia.
Sure.
We've been waiting for you, pal.
Well, that's nice of you, Rodney.
It's gonna be even nicer. I'm gonna relieve you of your gun. Then your coat will fit better.
That's not my gun. It's my tailor.
I'll have it anyway. I'd hate to put temptation in your path. Yeah, that's better.
You know, Roger, I'm surprised you forgot about Rodney so quickly.
Honey, I'm even more surprised. I must be slipping.
That can happen when a guy gets close to his end.
I've still got a way to go.
Have you?
Well, I thought I had, but I guess I could be wrong.
You certainly could, pal. You know, you're a guy who keeps looking for trouble.
Uh-uh. It keeps looking for me.
You should have kept moving south when you got off that yacht. A guy can't be that lucky twice.
I suppose not.
Yeah, you're a problem, pal. But not too big a one for a guy with brains.
Where is he? I don't see
him. Don't get smart, King.
Sorry.
You see, our problem with you is this. While you're still around, you're liable to tell Palvey things we don't want him to know. He's got a nasty, suspicious mind. So, what are we going to do?
Let's think it over for the next fortnight.
Murder isn't a rap I'd care to risk.
I'm glad to hear you say that.
I'll bet you are.
You haven't heard at all, pal.
I'm listening.
Tell me this. Where does Palvey think you are now?
Well, I guess he...
That's right, pal. He thinks you're under the water with the rest of the boys who are on his yacht. So maybe you can figure the answer to our problem now, huh?
If it's what I think it is.
You get the prize, pal. All I have to do is put you back where you belong, under the water, and nobody's going to miss you. And if anyone does, that's Palvey's worry, not mine.
You're forgetting one thing, Rodney. When I took that sea voyage, it was planned very suddenly. So suddenly that I didn't have a chance to shift my car from outside Palvey's office.
So what?
So the police impounded it after it had been there a couple of days.
I don't get it.
Guess when I paid $20 to get it back.
When?
Exactly 45 minutes ago. So if you knock me off, it's not going to be Palvey's worry. It's going to be yours. The police know I was alive an hour ago.
You're lying.
Wait a minute, Rodney. He's not. I remember seeing a car driven away from out front of the office. What model is it, Roger?
Blue Dodge, 49 sedan.
Well, that's it. I saw it.
Of all the rotten...
No language in front of the lady.
Rodney, this changes the whole thing. What are we going to do?
I don't know.
Well, I think I do.
Huh?
Let's have another look at this thing. Now that I've proved I'd be a nuisance if you killed me, what about a deal?
Such as?
You tell me what happens on the 18th, and I'll tell you what I know. How about that?
What's your angle, King?
I'm not working for anyone. I decided tonight to resign from my latest employer, so I've just got a large slice of curiosity after Palvey tried to get rid of me.
Whatever's behind it, there must be dough in it. And I'm not the sort of guy to look sideways at a buck. I'm not even ready to quarrel whether it's an honest buck or not.
Oh.
Marcia, what do you think?
That might be a proposition, Rodney. That's one sure way of keeping his mouth shut between now and the 18th. And we could use someone else. It might make the job easier.
Yeah. Yeah, you could be right at that. Okay, King, I'm putting the gun away. It's a deal.
Fine. How about a drink to clinch it? I've got a kind of dry feeling.
I'll bet with my gun staring you in the face. Yeah, fix the drinks, baby.
Sure.
That's pretty lucky for you, King. That business about the cops in your car.
Yeah, I guess so.
You'd have been laying around the bottom of the sea without it.
Forget that, Rodney. Here are the drinks.
Thanks. You'll forgive me if I don't wait. Hey, I needed that. Okay, Rodney, suppose you give with the story now.
Sure. Well, first of all, Palvey. Overseas Enterprises Incorporated, his import-export business, is just a sideline. His real work is jewelry. Palvey's one of the finest craftsmen in the world. Now, when anybody's got something really valuable they want altered or fixed, they take it along to Palvey. He's kept his name pretty quiet for obvious reasons.
Of course. He wouldn't want the boys who collect that kind of stuff illegally to get to hear about him.
Next, we come to a dame, the Baroness von Oltz. You ever heard of her, King?
No.
Well, you should have. She owns the Carmel Royne Diamond Pendant.
I've heard of that.
She bought it for $500,000. They say it's worth more now.
Must be nice to have money.
The Baroness arrived here a couple of days ago. It was in the papers.
I never read the social columns.
You should. Then you might have figured what that date means, the 18th. You see, on the 18th, there's a ball being held in honor of the Baroness von Oltz. Everybody who's anybody in town will be there. And the Baroness will be wearing her pendant.
Daylight breaks through. Correct me if I'm wrong. On the 18th, you aim to snatch the Baroness's pendant.
I'm correcting you. Palvey aims to have it snatched.
What? I may not be the brightest private eye in the business, but that doesn't sound smart to me.
You haven't heard the half of it.
I hope not. To snatch a pendant like that, you have to love it for its own sake. Nobody would touch it. It'd be too hot.
Sure, you're 100% right.
Well?
Well, it so happens that when the Baroness arrived here, she found the clip on the pendant needed some attention. So who does she send it to?
I'll guess. Palvey?
Palvey. The expert who, luckily enough, lives right here. And Palvey has the pendant for 3 days, with cops and guards sitting all over the joint.
So what? You're getting hard to follow, Rodney.
It'll clear up. Now get this. When Palvey knows he's getting the pendant to work on, he makes an imitation pendant, a pretty good one. Not so good that it'll fool the experts, but good enough to fool the Baroness. When the time comes for him to return the pendant, he's going to return the imitation and hang on to the original.
How does he figure he's going to get away with that? How long does he think it'll take before the Baroness finds out she's got a phony?
That's right. So Palvey is arranging to have the fake pendant snatched at the ball on the 18th.
Oh.
You get it now? He has the fake snatched. Then he waits for the insurance company to offer a reward. It's insured for $300,000. And the insurance company won't think there's anything unusual about the pendant being offered to them through a jeweler. I tell you, this Palvey character has some ideas.
Very neat. So he collects the insurance on the diamond without having to worry about disposing of it, which he couldn't do anyway, seeing it's so well known.
It's really one for the books, isn't it?
You said it, Marcia. But where do you and Rodney come into it?
That's simple. I'm the guy Palvey's paying to do the snatch.
Yeah? Well, that's interesting.
Isn't it?
But not as interesting as the setup between you and Marcia. From what I overheard earlier tonight, neither of you exactly care for Palvey.
You're going to say that again.
So my brilliant mind leaps to the conclusion that maybe you two are planning a little piece of double cross?
Right on the button, pal. We got it planned rather cutely, even though I say it myself. You see, I'll be at the ball, and so will Palvey. But while we're busy there, Marcia will be paying Palvey's office a visit and collecting the real pendant.
And then?
Then we fade quietly into the wide blue yonder until we can collect from the insurance company.
So that's it, Roger. How do you like it?
It doesn't sound a bad proposition. There's only one thing I don't understand, and that's Elise St. Creese and her boyfriend, Johnny.
Who?
Elise St. what? Who's she?
Marcia, you better pour another drink while I tell you. While they sip their drinks, I went through the story from the beginning. How Palvey hired me to follow Elise, and how she hired me to follow him, with all the details, right up to where we are now. When I finished, Rodney looked at Marcia, and they both looked at me.
I don't like the sound of that. This St. Creese dame and her sidekick must be after the pendant, too.
You'll have to watch out for them, Rodney.
Don't worry, I'm going to.
We're all going to. What's the situation right now?
Well, today is the 16th. Palvey's due to give the fake pendant to the Baroness tomorrow, the day before the ball.
Uh-huh. So now we just wait till the day after tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to me that this Elise St. Creese around, it might be a good idea if I went with Marcia when she collects the real pendant from Palvey's office.
Yeah, it might be at that. I'll think about it and let you know.
Fine. Now, if it's okay with you, I think I need some sleep.
Sure.
Oh, just one thing.
Yeah?
I sleep better with a gun under my pillow. Can I have mine back?
Sure. I'll even hand it to you, but first. After all, we're partners now, aren't we?
The social columns of the papers next morning were full of nothing but the Baroness von Alts and the coming ball. There was no photograph, but they gave the name of the hotel she was staying at. After coffee, I took a ride over to it. I wanted an interview with the Baroness, but when I climbed out of the elevator, four quiet-looking characters moved up to me, and one of them did the talking.
Yes?
I want to speak to the Baroness von Alts.
What's your business?
I'm Roger King, a private detective. My business is private and urgent.
Sorry, Mr. King, the Baroness is seeing nobody.
I tell you, it's important.
We've got our orders. You heard what they are.
Yeah, but I tell you...
Please, Mr. King, don't make a scene. There's only one of you, and there are four of us.
So I see, but... Say, who's that?
Hmm?
That woman who just walked out of that door and crossed the hall.
That is the Baroness herself.
It is? Well, in that case, let's forget the whole thing. I'll go.
Something amusing you?
Uh-huh. And it's no good explaining why, except to say that she may be the Baroness von Alts to you, but to me, she's Elise St. Creese.
Welcome back. Well, that's the type of experience that will make you thankful for a parking ticket. Definitely, Roger doesn't tend to join with the bad guys. He's already setting himself up for the double cross, but finding out the identity, that definitely adds a wrinkle on it. I think we're going to be set up for a madcap part four. So you want to be sure and listen as we wrap up Crime for a King. And, that will also, bring a pause in the Carter Brown stories. I continue to feel that these are really do get better over time. I think that, this one in particular, you know, just so much great dialogue. A great mystery, and already so many fine twists, and I have high expectations for part four, so again, be sure and come back. We have some comments on the newly scheduled shows, and we will share those with you on Saturday after the program, and we will be back tomorrow with the lineup, and then join us back here on Monday for the next Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar series. And next Friday for the conclusion of Crime for King. In the meanwhile, send your comments to Box 13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives. And become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.